Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time for another episode of All Over the Map. As we follow one family, they wander the world in search of their forever home. And a few adventures along the way. So let's find our weary travelers, our excited adventurers, Michael and Caitlin Dovner. Welcome.
Hello. Yeah, we're back in Ushuaia after our trip to Antarctica.
You say that so casually. After our trip to the moon, we're back after visiting Mars. And the obvious question that everybody wants to know when you go to another planet, when you go to another faraway place that most of us can only imagine is, what was it like?
Oh, my goodness. I would say it's so hard. We were just thinking through, like, what are we going to talk about? And it's so hard to put all of the pieces even into a 3 or 4 or 5 hour context. Right. I didn't, but just talking briefly about it here, it was better than we could have imagined as far as kind of our expectations of going. It was magical the whole time. We went on a cruise line that is essentially 5-star luxury, kind of small cruising yacht, small as in like 422 feet, so it's not small, but
and you had some concerns. You had some concerns about whether this was a little too fancy, you know, too white, white tux and caviar and champagne. Was it enough of the experience, or was it more just a giant party where you peer out the window and see things passing by?
Oh my gosh, I feel like it was a perfect mix of the two. It was absolutely caviar and champagne
almost every day.
almost every day. Why not?
Also, I mean, it was also adventure and exploring. I mean, we did 2 landings at almost every single day. So we'd do a landing in the morning, they'd sail to the next place, we'd do a landing in the afternoon. It was exhausting. I mean, we were like, we better take like a puzzle for the kids and like coloring books and plenty of books to read. Cause you know, I mean, it's 14 days on a boat. Like how, you know, I'm sure we're going to have a lot of downtime where we're not gonna be able to do much. But it was literally just go, go, go. From the first day on the boat, they were doing orientations and getting us ready for kayaking and ready for the expeditions on the Zodiacs and ready for getting our clothes fitted. Cause they gave us all parkas and boots. It was just nonstop go, go, go for those 14 days. I would say like the last day when we were coming back was the first time that it was like, whew, we got to just relax a little bit.
But then we had to pack.
Yeah. but no, Ponant was the cruise line, and it was just incredible. I mean, everything that you can imagine, luxury French, it was.
We had 5-course meals almost every single meal.
Yeah.
The kids were like, man, why does it take us like 3 hours to eat dinner?
Because it's good. And memorize this food, kid. Yeah, you won't see this every day. We're not cooking this for dinner next week here.
they could order a ribeye steak at any time. Like 24 hours a day would be a room service or any of the meals. And the kids were like, this is amazing. We're like, we are not getting ribeye every day when we get off the boat.
We are never leaving this boat. This is our forever home. We are going to stay here for as long as we can. Well, let's talk about that.
That is very true.
Because I was thinking of you the other day. I watched, maybe this is a weird analogy, but I talk about it all the time. On one of our other shows, on an electric bike show, I got a chance to talk to the legendary William Shatner, Captain Kirk. Who for years fired up my imagination as a little boy and so many men of my era watching Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, new adventures, you know, going boldly where no one's ever gone before. And of course, as he said, that was acting. He never actually did it, but he recently did. He got to go up on a rare trip up into the edge of the outer space. Jeff Bezos, and as a publicity stunt, allowed this 90-year-old man to fly up. And he was so emotional. And afterwards, I saw an interview with him on CNN, and they said, well, you know, you played Captain Kirk. He said, I played him. It was acting. I didn't think I'd ever actually do any of this stuff here. And even he was just blown away by the it sounds similar patterns here. He had to go through a lot of preparation to go up into space. You don't just drive over and get on the rocket ship. They got to fit you with an outfit. They got to make sure you fit in the space capsule. They got to prepare you for what you're going to see and what's going to happen here. And then it's over so quickly. And he said, I hope I never forget this feeling. I mean, he was crying when he got off the thing. Did you feel like that? Was it like, we've got to memorize every moment of this? Kids, don't forget this.
Yeah, absolutely. And your comparison to space is not far off. When we landed on the first stop, it was Penguin Island, and it's a volcanic
crater.
And it's just stark. There was just cinder and basalt and pumice and all of these volcanic rocks and maybe a smattering of snow. But we're all dressed in these huge snow suits and we're like stumbling on this rocky terrain. And I told Jackson, who wants to be an astronaut, I'm like, dude, this is your Mars training right here.
This is
like,
it.
You're landing in the middle of nowhere and walking through nothing.
In a giant suit feel anything through.
Yeah, exactly. Really, it really sounds like that to me, because you are in a moon suit, because you're in an environment that people can't.
Is not made for humanity.
Yes, exactly. Right. You're in a bubble.
Yeah.
And so they prepare you for this. I've never done anything that incredible, but the few times I've seen something that I thought was incredible, a beach or something, I would say to my family, memorize this moment.
You know, eye pictures. That's what we tell the kids. Take eye pictures right now, guys. Remember this. Yeah.
Because it's easy to get caught up and then go, wow. And then you get home and say, what happened? What did I see?
What did we do? Yeah. So it was really incredible. Kind of one of the things that you just said, like that bubble, like you're in a bubble, and it really was the juxtaposition of like the finest 5-star luxury that I've ever experienced on the boat. Right. And then when we go out on these Zodiac cruises, I mean, it's literally nothing. There's no human imprint anywhere. There's like every once in a while we'll see like a small emergency cabin on an island somewhere where you can go if your boat sinks, so you can survive for a couple months till they come and get you. But I mean, it's just incredible how it's just stark white and granite and mountains, but I mean, 80% of it's white and the blue of the ocean. And it just, it's incredible to the how peaceful it is and how nature is like it's just untouched by human hands. I mean, the penguins and the seals and the skua and the birds have had this land for forever.
Yeah.
and they just do their thing. Like it's normal. And the whales, the killer whales, orca. I mean, it was the humpback whale. It just, everything, it just took our breath away. Every single day, every single landing was incredible. There were times where we had to kind of drag the kids up snow mountains when we'd go for a little hike if they weren't feeling very energetic that day. But even they were just blown away by the beauty and the nature of
that's
it.
That's what I was going to say. I was just going to ask one question, and I'll let Caitlin jump in here again. The kids, how did they react to it? Because the fear is, well, this is like the Blue Hole in Belize. This is like going out to the Galapagos. Yeah, I know you guys think it's great, but this is really long and it's boring. And what's so great about this? They don't appreciate the significance of this, the strangeness of this, the uniqueness of this. And they're looking for similarity. I'd much rather be at home watching SpongeBob or something here. You know, I don't know, or whatever.
They definitely had their moments where, I mean, we decided that for them, we would usually only bring them on one or the other of the excursions, because it was just a lot of work to get them in and out of the clothes.
It was almost 40 minutes just to get like snowsuits, two pairs of socks, underwear, 3 layers of shirts.
Wow.
We had like
and then the parka and the gloves.
We ended up with like a 20-step pre-expedition checklist.
Yeah. Pre-launch.
Go pee, because once the snowsuit is on, you
can't
not
go pee anymore.
I never thought of that. Once you're zipped up, you can't say, I got to go to the bathroom. I'm too late, baby. You know, we're going.
Yeah. And on the island, once you're on land, you can't just, like, you know, sometimes guys are like, I'm just going to go behind this bush over here. But it's very strict as far as, you know, organic material. Like, you can't leave anything behind or take anything. And once you're on there, they have like an emergency Zodiac that could take you back if you had to go pee. But there's just no opportunity. So, it was amazing.
Okay. So how about
I think to them, like the landscape it was nice, but for them it was like, we want to play in the snow.
Yeah.
So for example, one time we were hiking up to one of the cliffs to get this beautiful vista, and Jackson and Cora just decided, you know what, we're going to make it halfway and we're just going to play in the snow.
We are not taking another step up this right, mountain. Yeah. We're really just
setting. So Michael puts Bradley on his back and just hoofs it up the mountain. But when we get back, the expedition leader like takes a picture of the hill, or is like showing us in the hill. You see this track where everybody else walked, and then do you see how like there's this randomness that comes smattering halfway down? Steps. He's like, yeah, those were your kids rolling down the hill. He's like, you see how like 12 feet further on, there's a huge crevasse where the snow ends and oh, the ice falls through. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, yeah, got it. Got it. This is not fun.
Maybe this isn't the snow day at Disneyland or something here. Yeah, where they bring the snow in and pile it in the parking lot.
Yeah, trying to put it into context too, it was like, I feel like the whole experience was magical, but as far as the number of people that were on the boat, there were only about 76 passengers, and there's normally about 200 passengers is what the boat's capacity is. But just kind of like timing, Argentina just opening back up. I mean, just like this whole range of reasons, we just wound up with literally less than half of what would normally be on the boat. And the crew outnumbered us 2-1. There's 147 crew on board.
Wow.
So literally there were twice as many crew as there were passengers. And our three kids were the only children on the boat. Wow. Caitlin and I were probably close to the next youngest. I would say probably about 45 or 50 of those 76 spoke French almost exclusively. Yeah. Wow. So it was very interesting. Just the experience and having such a small boat, I think, allowed us to do a lot, like leaving the, like there were a couple times we left the kids down on the beach to watch the penguins while mom and I climbed up the hill to get the vista shot, kind of a thing. And and there were enough crew members around and enough, you know, we made some friends that spoke English that we got to hang out with, and so they would help us kind of keep an eye on the kids if Caitlin and I wandered off too long. But it was amazing.
So the otherworldliness, if that's a word, the mm-hmm. the fact that this is way out of your normal experience wasn't just that you're at the South Pole, you're living a luxury five-star French, well, that with all the meaning that has of food and drink and everything, and
can-can dancers, like they had a whole dance team that gave dance lessons every night and did like performances with like feather boas. It was amazing.
It was very French, like you said, all the things that implies.
Yeah. So you've got this French, luxury, wee French experience that we can only imagine as a Americans, even the wealthiest Americans aren't used to this sort of nobility treatment that the French love to pour mm-hmm. out, where every meal takes hours and everything is grand and spectacular, the way they present everything and do everything, and very formal, I suppose, too. And tuxes and all these other things here. It's not just grabbing a burger and going like we're used to here in America. And then they're speaking
a foreign meals where we would do that. We'd be like, we're just going to order room service tonight and do burgers because we can't take another 3-hour dinner kind of a thing.
We got to get to bed. Yeah,
exactly.
And they start their meals at 7:30 at night. So we rarely got out of the dining room before 10. Wow.
It's okay because the sun never really went down.
That was another thing. We were literally 21 hours of daylight. So the sun didn't set until about 11:30 or midnight. And then it came back up by 2:15, 2:30. Yeah. So it was
you could still like read a book on the deck.
Oh, yeah. No, it was light outside the whole time. Yeah. So it's a nice ship. So they have dark curtains and that kind of thing. But it was 21 hours of daylight. It just feels crazy for what we're used to.
And what's that like? Because I hear people who live in Alaska up in the far reaches and they, this is part of their normal experience. I can't imagine that going through either months of all darkness, or that reminds me too much of the dreary Midwest in the winter. This the opposite, endless summer, endless sun, endless sunlight. That would be strange too. So again, everything is amazing. It's hitting all your senses. Yeah.
You literally had hours of sunset opportunity to take photos. Yeah. I mean, it was just like the sun was rarely straight up in the sky, which is bad for photography, right? Right. It was always kind of playing around the edges of the horizon. And so that was amazing. It's funny because once we got back here to Ushuaia just yesterday, we met some people that live in the same building for the Airbnb that we're renting. Uh-huh. And they had a couple families where, I don't know, they had like six or eight kids, I think, but they had a couple families worth of kids. And they were like, oh, it's Christmas break. We basically just let the kids stay up as late as they want. So the kids stay up until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning because it's still light outside. And literally, like, we could hear them. They're directly above us. So we could hear them like playing all night long. The kids just having
fun. Why not? Because you don't go to sleep because there's no darkness. Yeah. So there's an urge to stay up. It's endless summer. It's endless daylight here.
And the kids are out of school. Like, this is their summer break, basically. So they're out of school until February. So they have 2 or 3 months of break. And it's the holidays. So it's just this kind of festive spirit. Like, you know, let them stay up. Let them have fun. Let them play. And we'll catch up on sleep in the wintertime, I'm sure.
And what about this generational difference? Because I would assume, and you seem to confirm, that this is mostly people. This is something they've saved a lifetime for. This is sort of the last gas. You're in that sunset tour of the world in the last phase of your life here. So you're seeing all the things that you wanted to see your whole life. You're doing it the opposite. You're doing it at the early part of your life, the early part of your kids' life. And it sounds like you're the only ones doing that.
Yeah, there were a couple of younger, like maybe they had just gotten married, and so their parents had bought them the cruise for their honeymoon or something like that. Was kind of the feeling, but yeah, for the most part, I would say 50 plus was maybe 60 plus was probably closer to the kind of the average age of the ship.
Right.
We brought it way down with the five of us, but no, it was. I feel like I really enjoyed it though too, because I love talking to people of all ages and really getting to know people that have some incredible stories. So just being able to spend time with people that are older than us, out of our generation. Caitlin and I have always found ourselves kind of drawn to older generations. We don't have a whole lot of friends that are our age. And so it was really great. I think some of them were a little bit some of them loved the kids, like, oh, my grandkids are here, kind of a feel. Right, and then some of them were kind of that, like, kind of annoyed. Stuffy, annoyed, like, oh, my gosh, they brought the children.
Yeah. But couldn't they leave them home just once? Yeah, right, exactly. But I would think a lot of them would be like me. I would be like, oh, my goodness, you'd have 100 grandparents now on the boat with you here, and they'd all want to do stuff with the kids and hang out with them.
And we did have, so Pinant partners with National Geographic. And so they had two National Geographic people on the boat. One was a photographer and one was a journalist, like a writer. And they really made the trip just even that much more exceptional. So Jason, the photographer, was giving photography lessons and like,
this is what he's been shooting for National Geographic for 25 plus years.
Right.
So literally he was telling us stories about in every wilderness condition, the Serengeti to the Arctic to and everywhere in between, and giving pointers on how to shoot photography. So it was great to kind of get that firsthand knowledge and just talking to somebody who's lived that kind of a life was incredible.
Right.
Yeah. And then Andrew, the journalist, was giving lessons on storytelling really took Cora under his wing. He knits and that's something that he's just done his whole life. Wherever he's traveling, he just has his bag of knitting. And so he taught Cora how to knit, gave her lots of yarn, and like really just made the whole experience really special for her. So she gained a valuable life skill while she was there. But it was just, they really
knitting at the South Pole. That should be a class that everybody should take here. Knitting 101 at the South Pole. All right. So, well, the question
we're also going to own Cora turned 10 while we were down there.
Oh, wow.
And she, on her birthday, we went out onto the fast ice. Yeah. So it's ice that's up against the land. It doesn't move with the tide anymore, but it's coming out over the bay. And we're claiming that Cora was the first girl to spend her 10th birthday on the fast ice in Antarctica. Unless somebody sends us picture proof otherwise, we're going to own that one.
We're going to own that one. That's her title for the rest of her life. Oh, yeah. That's the girl that celebrated her 10th birthday in Antarctica.
Yeah.
It's wonder. And I think the two things that's come to mind is I got to ask one question and then get one reaction. The one question is, what do you say to each other, to a family, when you're experiencing this? For example, watching William Shatner, the documentary, when they actually get into space, everybody's just giddy like little kids. Oh, look at this. Look at this. There are no words at that moment. What do you say to each other as you're seeing this? Is there a conversation, or is it just awe and wonder and silence?
Yeah, there was a lot of awe and wonder and silence. Andrew, actually, in one of his presentations, said it was making the case that silence, solitude, and nature are the true modern luxuries. In a world where you can have anything, anywhere, the best parts of life are just getting out into nature by yourself and being silent. And so, yeah, there's some really fantastic opportunities for reflection, but mostly of just gratitude, like just so grateful that we were able to be here as a family and make these memories. And you said you may not go back. I absolutely will. Like, it was
really?
maybe with my grandkids, who knows how long it'll be, but I've really fallen in love with the polar regions. I'm like, okay, next, let's try the North Pole. Like, let's see what that looks like. But I going back to like originally, like this wasn't your search for your forever home, but there were a lot of elements that I realized, like, A, snow can be beautiful if you're prepared for it.
That's something that we've never really like put on our list. But now that we've seen, and this was extreme snow, admittedly, right? Like glaciers and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it really was incredibly beautiful. As long as you're prepared, if you're wearing a parka and you've got the ski boots and snow pants that aren't going to get wet, it's actually enjoyable to go out and spend time in it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what my relatives in northern Minnesota would tell you. They love it there. The see the northern lights and the experience winter. There is a certain starkness and beauty and quiet to it. It's very quiet.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I guess because there aren't birds flying and bugs chirping and other sorts of things that we take. But I'm going to pick up on what Caitlin just said. We did a show a while ago with somebody that designs real high-end spa experiences, like at the Four Seasons. And you pay, like you guys did, I pay a bunch of money to experience, you know, ultimate luxury here. And one of the ultimate luxuries that they're building into all these ultimate spas is a quiet room, a soundproof room. And they said, how strange that we have to pay for silence in a world where noise is everywhere. The car beeps, the something whirring overhead, there's noise everywhere. There's something on your phone is going off. That notion that just to be alone and quiet is something people can't experience anymore very often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I was trying to find that in Antarctica. There were a few times that I would walk off and you know, they'd give us probably maybe a kilometer or so of land that we could spread out on when we would land. And it, just going and sitting on the beach and being surrounded by penguins where I can't see any other humans is just magical. Yeah. Hearing the penguins, I mean, there's still some noise because the penguins are squawking and the you know, the waves are coming in and the gulls are crying, but the kids aren't crying, which was amazing. Just being able to just sit down and really just take that in and being surrounded by ice flows and it just
color blue.
Yeah, the blue in the ice and everything. It was incredible.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I will take away is there's really nowhere else that you see neon blue in nature. And it's just you try to capture it in photos, but just blue, like the dark cobalt of the sea at noon and then the neon blue of the glacier crevasse and then the turquoise blue, like better than the Caribbean, where you see the iceberg going under the water and you're looking through the water at the bottom of the iceberg and just everywhere. It's just these incredible colors. Because I remember I was thinking about going to Antarctica and it was more like, well, we got to go because we said we'd hit all seven continents.
Let's check that box.
Right.
Exactly.
And I'm like, it's rock and it's snow. Like, what's the big deal? It's so much more vibrant and there's so much more wildlife than like we were seeing Weddell seals and elephant seals and a couple crab eater seals, which is a misnomer because they eat krill. And like, and our kids are fantastic at identifying Adelie and Gentoo and chinstrap penguins now. And
a skill that will come in useful in life, I'm sure, when they come back to civilization somewhere. that's a. I know
before
that kind of
penguin. To be a marine biologist. Now I'm like, are you going to be a polar marine biologist? This is awesome.
And one of the other cool things was were the orcas, like the killer whales were just amazing. We saw a pod of about 15 of them that swam, kind of surrounded our boat, and they were chasing a whale that they were kind of testing to see if they could take it. They were herding it as the as a pod of hunters, and it was just really amazing to see kind of them in their natural environment. I mean, I've seen them at SeaWorld, but it's just so different.
Seen them at SeaWorld, but not. Yeah, exactly. We've all seen this at SeaWorld. I've seen polar things at amusement parks. We've all seen it from afar, but you were experiencing it. You were in it. So what is it like due to your senses? Because you're seeing blues that you can't see anywhere else. You're seeing bright white. You're seeing in all light all day. I would assume that the night sky is filled with stars. I remember the one time I went to Belize, I couldn't believe how many stars there were in the sky. I'd never, as far out in the desert as I thought I'd been, I'd never seen that many stars in the sky. No, there's no filter. Yeah. There's no pollution. There's nothing. There's no sound pollution. There's no
Light pollution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than the sun being the light pollution. So we didn't see any stars just because it never got
dark.
That's
true. Yeah. Okay.
But,
what am I thinking? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it does make me wonder, like going back in winter condition or going to see the northern lights in the winter.
Yeah, the northern lights is.
But yeah, it's breathtaking. And I think it's just realizing it. Like I remember coming back on the boat. We were sailing back into Ushuaia. I think it was Port Williams was the first one. Yeah. And looking out, and instead of just seeing cliffs and icebergs and islands all completely perfect and pristine, I'm now seeing buildings and cities and human, and I was like, oh, I like had this moment. It's like, I don't want to go back.
The scars of humanity here, sound and trash and buildings and light and noise and everything else that we seem to bring with us. Paper produce thrown out on the side here, coffee cups. So the last question is this: how do you describe the indescribable to somebody who hasn't seen it? Because that's what struck me when I watched William Shatner's documentary about going into space. When it's over, he's just babbling like a little kid, and he's saying the same words. It's incredible. It's amazing. I can't believe it. I can't describe it. And I hear that when people come back from some life-altering experience. You just had to be there. Is it a place you just have to be there, or can you paint a picture for us?
I was just thinking about that as you started to ask that question. I was like, I think I've said amazing and incredible.
Yeah.
I don't even know, probably 20 times each during this conversation.
I think you have, right? Because we come up short. I don't know how to describe to you the indescribable. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think one thing is photography. So I think Caitlin, as she was taking photos and learning more about taking photos, I mean, we can look at the first photos that she took on her trip, and then kind of the training that she did with Jason and spent time with him, and look at the last photos, and the last photos are just exponentially better. Not that the first ones weren't good, honey.
Oh, they were terrible.
Not that they weren't good, honey. I don't want to say that.
And I think photos are one way to do that, right? They always say
capture
photos with 1,000 words, but but even that, just like you get such a small piece of the experience in a photo. It can be a beautiful, it can make you just stop and your jaw drop, but you don't get the real scope and the real size of it. Like that was another piece, just how big it is.
Yeah.
And we would sail 300 kilometers at night, and literally just knowing that there's no other people within a circle that big around us is just, it's really, really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you capture people? That's an interesting question. We could do a whole show on that, or I'd love to hear your photographer. What do you train your camera on? I have a tendency to capture the same picture over and over again. So I come back from a trip and I say, you're in Europe. Here's an old building, another old building, another old building. Here's a castle, another old building. And you go, okay, I saw, or I'm in Florida, the Caribbean. Here's a beautiful beach. Here's another beautiful beach. Here's another beautiful beach. Do you just capture the same thing over and over again, or do you try and find the uniqueness, the different picture, or are you just overwhelmed? Here's another penguin. Here's another penguin. Here's another penguin.
I think that was one of the things that I took away from Jason's kind of knowledge the most, is he said, take a picture of one thing and then use the environment around it to tell this story. So yes, always have one thing in your picture. And you could take 100. I mean, I think we did probably take thousands of pictures of icebergs, right? But each one is a little bit different, and each one can tell a different story based on the surrounding. I'll let Caitlin talk more about that because she's the artist. But yeah, just that always have the one thing in your photo, and then use the surrounding and the ambiance and the lighting.
So it's the relationship of that one thing to the environment, the little kid standing in the middle of a crowd, the penguin standing against some stark background or something. You have to build some character into it. It can't just be an endless vista, because then they all look the same. At least that's what my pictures do when I get home. I go, well, they all look exactly the same.
Yeah, and maybe we should have Jason and Andrew come and be guests on the show, because they're just fantastic human beings. But yeah, I think the one thing is a critical piece in storytelling and in photography. It's the weird thing that when you get more specific, it becomes more universal. Like, you focus on the one kid in the crowd versus the entire crowd, and you feel like you're there.
Because you make a connection.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And I think that's what was hard for me, because you're like, oh, it's just another penguin. And yeah, by the end, I was like, oh, I don't need another picture of a Gentoo. Like, I've got so many pictures of Gentoo, it's ridiculous.
Right.
And then again, Jason was sharing his photos. And I mean, this guy's been doing photography for 25 years. He's submitted to National Geographic 25,000 photos, which means he's probably taken 2.5 million of them at some point.
Right. Yeah.
And he was like, you have to bring fresh eyes to every picture shoot. Like, you can't get tired just because you've seen a bunch of penguins. You've never seen this penguin
doing
in this light
thing,
doing this thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's like a lesson for life.
Yes,
because we get in these routines. You can drive all the way to work and not realize you've been in the car. Like, we go through our life on autopilot so often. And what I love about photography and what I love about our travels is it's forcing us to experience each place with the eyes of a child. Like, we've never seen this before. We may never see this again. You're getting these little snapshots of reality, and you have to keep your eyes open. You have to pay attention with your whole soul, because this is amazing. And every day of life could be that amazing if we brought that attitude towards it, except it's just exhausting after a while.
And I think too, like what you just said is we may never see this again, but I would go one step further and say you will never experience this again, right? This penguin with this lighting doing this thing, like, I mean, every single thing that we experience is a new experience, whether it's the hundredth time this year that you've driven this road, because this is how you go to work every day. But it's work. It's not easy to try to see things with fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. I'm guilty of it just as much as the next person, and when we were in Apple Valley and I was driving down Central Road, you let your brain go on autopilot. You don't even realize it till you get where you're going.
Right.
But no, traveling has really, really ingrained that. Like every single thing is a new experience.
It forces you to stay in the moment and you're constantly jarring yourself to wake up, pay attention, look around, capture a picture, memorize something, take this in and savor it. Don't forget it. Mm-hmm. That's what Shatner said when he got off the thing. He's crying as he gets off, and he says, I can't describe what you've given to me. And he said, but I hope I never forget it. I suspect it's a trip you hope you'll never forget.
Absolutely. One of the quotes that we got on the ship was, traveling is not about new destinations. It's about new eyes. And that's really what I want to take away, is like, not just for Antarctica, for everything that we're doing, but how do we see better as a result of the places we've seen?
And the last thing, I think that says it all. And I will leave it there. I just wonder, as we talk next, is there a hangover effect? Is this like getting drunk? Does it take a while to come down from this high? And are you just giddy right now in the afterglow here?
I would say on one hand, yes, but on the other hand, there's also kind of a depression, oh man, like coming down off of it. But it's funny, because like the physical after effects, like we were just on a boat on pretty rough waters for the last 2 weeks. And I swear, walking around our apartment, that the ground is still moving. Like, I feel myself walking down the hallway, and I like bump into one side and then bump into the other side. I'm like, wait a second, I'm on land. It's not moving.
Adjust, adapt, get back to reality here. The world is not spinning around you. Well, for 14 days, it sounds like the world was spinning around you, and you couldn't see it fast enough or get enough pictures of it or take it all in. What last question to, I'll start with Michael, and then we'll leave with our philosopher, Caitlin, here. Just quick reaction. What one image, one thought, one thing you'll never forget. Michael. Whatever comes to your mind. Could be anything, big, little.
I think for me, there was a point where we saw penguins on an iceberg or on a iceberg floating in the water, and there were killer whales around it. And for me, it was just this kind of unreal seeing something that like these killer whales are obviously hunting these penguins. Yeah. The penguins have jumped up onto this little iceberg that we're driving past in this 400 foot ship. I don't know, just being that close to an experience of nature and things that I don't know that I would have ever said that I'd get to see, or
in awe. That moment you'll take with you to the day you die, that you'll see that image and remember that picture. Caitlin, what's your picture? You took a million pictures. What's the picture that you'll take with you forever?
Only 5,254. That's all.
Okay. So of those, pick one. You got to just show me one. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think we were walking on, was it Portal Point? And it's like blizzardy conditions, like wind is howling, snow is falling. And we got a couple of shots of the penguins, like just hunkered down in the snow, half buried, and them still waddling back and forth to the water. And realizing like, we are not made for Antarctica. Antarctica is not made for us.
No.
But seeing how these animals have adapted, that these birds who have given up flight because they want to swim, the seals that have special ridged teeth so they can strain out krill from the water, and actually like slow down their heart rate when they dive, like the learning about the animals and the adaptations that they've done to live in these conditions, which we would consider incredibly inhospitable. We had our friend was cross country skiing to the South Pole and had to be emergency helicoptered back with frostbite.
Yeah.
Almost lost three of the fingers.
Yeah. This isn't just a weekend adventure hiking in the mountains. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Right. And you realize like less than 100 years ago, people were literally dying trying to just explore this place. Like this is not, it's not for humans. There's just this sense of humility of recognizing like, like I'm so grateful I get this chance to be here, but I don't belong here. And experiencing Mother Nature in just her glorious wonder and power, and recognizing I'm such a small piece of this. And there's it's a really harsh reality, and they choose to live here. Like this is the forever home for these animals.
Right.
And that it just reminds me of like how beautiful and yet resilient life is, and this planet is, it's even more amazing than
takeaway I'm going to remember from this conversation is all of that and one more image of a 10-year-old girl celebrating her birthday in the middle of French cuisine and old seniors gray panthers riding into the sunset and on an ice shelf in the middle of an inhospitable world here. I suspect that's an image that will be with her forever. And the gift that you gave her by taking her there. It's an amazing story. Well, I'll let you just wind down and live in the afterglow. We'll talk next and we'll figure out where you go from here as we explore.
Yeah, we're gonna spend Christmas here in Ushuaia. And
we really don't know after that. We've got to figure out if Chile will let us in. And we'll let you know next week where we're going.
Okay, well, tune in, folks, as we join the All Over the Map family as they've been to the ends of the earth and back on this week's episode, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio.net.